We're going to read from a book called Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila Chapter 8, Talks Between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai. Text 1. Sancharya Rama Bidabhakta Mege Swabhakti Siddhanta Chayamritani Korabhirathair Amunavitirnas Tajgyatvaratnayalatam Prayati. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is known as Gauranga, is the ocean of all conclusive knowledge in devotional service. He empowered Sri Ramananda Rai, who may be likened to a cloud of devotional service. This cloud was filled with the water of all the conclusive purports of devotional service and was empowered by the ocean to spread this water over the sea of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. Thus the ocean of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became filled with the jewels of the knowledge of pure devotional service. So, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, according to revealed scriptures, is Krishna himself, the origin of all knowledge, perfect knowledge. But here, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although he is the ocean of knowledge of the transcendental mellows of devotional service, is taking the part of a student and asking questions. But because he is the Lord, he has empowered Sri Ramananda Rai to give the perfect answers. And therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is compared to an ocean, and Ramananda Rai is a cloud. The cloud derives its water from the ocean, and then it pours down its rain back onto the ocean. So, last Sunday was Ramananda Rai's disappearance day, and we began to discuss the conversation between Ramananda Rai and Lord Chaitanya last Sunday. So now we will continue. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Text 243. Anyonye milidune nibrite vasya prashnotara goshti kahe anandita. Thus they met time and time again, sitting in a secluded place and jubilantly discussing devotional service by the question and answer process. Prabhu Puche Ramananda Karena Uttara Ematase Ratre Kata Paraspara. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked the questions, and Sri Ramananda Rai gave the answers. In this way, they were engaged in discussion throughout the night. Prabhu kahe kon vidya vidya madhye sara, Raya kahe Krishna bhakti vina vidya nahyara. On one occasion, the Lord inquired, of all types of education, which is the most important? Ramananda replied, no education is important other than the transcendental devotional service of Krishna. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Texts 245 to 257 are all questions and answers between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai. In these exchanges, there is an attempt to show the difference between material and spiritual existence. Education in Krishna consciousness is always transcendental. It is the best of all forms of education. Material education aims at increasing the activities of material sense gratification. Beyond material sense gratification is another negative form of knowledge called Brahma Vidya, or impersonal transcendental knowledge. But beyond that Brahma Vidya, or knowledge of the impersonal Brahman, is knowledge of devotional service to the Supreme Lord, Vishnu. This knowledge is higher. And still higher is devotional service to Lord Krishna, which is the topmost form of education. According to Srimad Bhagavatam 4:29-49, Tat karma haritosham yat savidya tan materyaya. Work meant for pleasing the Supreme Lord is the best, and education that enhances one's Krishna consciousness is the best. Also, according to Srimad Bhagavatam 7:5, 23 and 24, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Padasevanam Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Sakyamatmanivedanam Iti Pum Sarpita Vishno Bhaktischennavalakshana Kriyeta Bhagavatyadha Tanmanye Ditamuttamam. This is a statement given by Prahlad Maharaj in answer to a question raised by his father. Prahlad Maharaj said, to hear or chant about Lord Vishnu, to remember him, to serve his lotus feet, to worship him, to offer prayers to him, to become his servant and his friend, to sacrifice everything for his service. All these are varieties of devotional service. One who is engaged in such activities is understood to be educated to the topmost perfection. So this is the first in the series of questions and answers. And it seems appropriate, being in this environment of education. But, as Srila Prabhupada says at the beginning of the purport, that the questions and answers are meant to highlight the difference between material and spiritual. Material begins from the basic misconception that I am the body and everything in relation to the body is mine. And more or less everyone is in the bodily concept of life. They very strongly identify with the body and they are very deeply attached to things related to the body. Because they identify with the body, they think that the goal of life is to give pleasure to the body, or the senses of the body. And more or less everything they do is for the sake of the body. Srila Prabhupada gives the example that if you're performing a mathematical calculation and you make a mistake in the first step, then most likely, even if you perform all the other steps perfectly, you'll get further and further away from the actual answer or solution. So if we begin from the mistaken premise that I'm the body, and even if everything else we do is perfect in terms of the body, but because we've made the most fundamental error in the very first step, we end up further and further away from the actual solution. The body itself is full of miseries. As soon as we accept a material body, we accept miseries. Janma, mritu, jara, vyadi, birth, death, disease, and old age. And so many other miseries, three types of miseries. And everyone wants relief from these miseries. But as long as they're in the body, in the bodily concept of life, although they may adopt some measure that may temporarily give some relief, but ultimately they cannot escape the miseries of material existence, and often the remedies they accept are more troublesome than the maladies that they are meant to address. So that's the basic situation in material life. But because of Maya, people are not aware of their actual position. Maya has two potencies. One pushes us down, and the other covers us. And because we are covered, we think we're happy. Even though a sober person or a sane person can see that we're not, that we're always being subjected to various different types of miseries, but because of the covering potency of Maya, we think we're happy. Most people, well, of course, now things are getting so bad that it's becoming harder and harder to maintain that illusion. But even then, most people, if you ask them how you're doing, they'll say, fine. Srila Prabhupada gave the example of a patient in a hospital. He's very, suffered in a very severe accident, and he's got tubes all over his body, and his leg is in traction, and his arm is in a cast. He has so many contraptions meant to counteract the suffering. And you ask him how he is, he says, "I'm okay. I'm doing okay. I'm doing good." So that's our position. And when one becomes a little sober and actually realizes his position, then he will try to make a solution, get out of the material miseries, the bondage of material existence. He will inquire, as Sanatana Goswami inquired of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "Ke ami? Who am I? Why am I forced to suffer the threefold miseries? And how can I get relief?" That is the beginning of human intelligence. Up until then, it's just animal life, eating, sleeping, enjoying sense gratification, and making some arrangement for shelter and defense. So when one actually inquires, as Sanatana Goswami did of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's actually considered to be a human being. And of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the answer, Jive Swarupai Krishna Nityadas. Sanatana Goswami asked, "Who am I?" And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied that the constitutional position of the living entity is that he is the eternal servant of Krishna, Krishna Nityadas. That means that even after liberation, we are the servants of Krishna. Now, in between the karmis, those who engage in fruitive activities, who work to earn money, to spend, to enjoy, either in gross ways or subtle ways, and the bhaktas who understand that they're eternal servants of Krishna and engage in devotional service, in between them are the jnanis who want, they understand, in that sense they're more elevated than the karmis. They understand the miseries of material existence and they want to get out. But because they do not have knowledge of Krishna and the actual constitutional position of the living entity as the eternal servant of Krishna, they approach the matter in a negative way. They think that I'm an individual and I'm suffering, so if I give up being an individual, then I won't have to suffer anymore. I have desires, and by pursuing my desires, I suffer. So I'll give up desires. I have thoughts, and my thoughts culminate in misery, so I'll give up thinking. I have feeling, my feelings end up in misery, so I'll give up feeling. So they want to negate. No more activities, no more thinking, no more feeling, no more desiring, and they want to merge and become one with God. Ultimately, the principle is the same. The karmis, they want to become the chief. It's like now there's competition, who's going to become the president? going to become the chief. And the Gyanis, the impersonalists, they also want to become the chief by merging and becoming one with God. But the real solution is to become the servant. Jivair Swarupai Krishna and Nitya Das. And that is real knowledge. And therefore, Ramananda Rai says that other than knowledge of devotional service, which is the constitutional activity of the living entity, there's no real knowledge. The rest is all illusion. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that material education makes one more and more foolish because it's all based on the body. So identifying with the body is foolish, and the mundane education that reinforces the bodily concept of life and teaches one how to, you know, ultimately earn money and enjoy the body better, makes one more foolish. So the only real knowledge is the knowledge of devotional service. Now when I met Srila Prabhupada and the devotees in 1969 as a student in Brandeis University, before then I had been seeking, and when I met Srila Prabhupada I understood that he was the teacher that I was looking for, and I surrendered to him. Without surrender, one cannot really get knowledge. And that we see in the Bhagavad Gita. It was only when Arjuna surrendered to Krishna, Shishyaste Ham Shadimam Tvam Prapanam, he said, I'm confused about my duty. Now I am a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. When he surrendered, then Krishna was able to instruct him. So first is surrender. Tadviti panipatena pariprashnena sevaya. Without surrender to an authority, a spiritual master, one cannot get transcendental knowledge. So I surrendered to Srila Prabhupada, and after serving in the Boston Temple for a few weeks, I got a letter from Srila Prabhupada saying that he had received a letter from my father which stated that I had a good aptitude for studies and that I should continue my education. And my father mentioned psychology, philosophy, and religion as my interests. And Srila Prabhupada wrote back that, of course, in those days they used the word divinity. I don't think religious studies had really begun or become very popular yet. They had divinity schools. So he said, of course, divinity is more in our line, and so you can continue your studies and show that Krishna consciousness is the postgraduate course of all religious studies. So I received the letter, and I was unsure how to proceed because I didn't want to go back to the university. But I knew that the order of the spiritual master is the first consideration, the highest consideration. But I wasn't sure if it was an order or just an option. And I consulted my temple president, and he also couldn't say one way or the other. So we concluded that I should write Srila Prabhupada. I told my temple president what I was thinking and feeling. And so I wrote Srila Prabhupada that if you are instructing me to pursue my studies, then I will do whatever you say. But if you're giving me the choice, then I would rather stay in the temple with the devotees and worship the deity and go out and chant. Then a few days later, another letter came from Srila Prabhupada. Yes, there's no need of any further education. And then he quoted that when Prahlad's father asked him, what is the best education? Prahlad replied that devotional service to Vishnu is the best education. And when Lord Chaitanya was discussing with Ramananda Rai who was the best educated person, the answer was that, he is who is a devotee of Krishna, he is the best educated. So, we'll read the next verse. Kirti gana madhye jivera kona bada kirti. Kirti. Kirti gana madhye jivera kona bada kirti. Krishna bhakta balya yanhara haya kayati. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then asked Ramananda Rai, out of all glorious activities, which is the most glorious? Ramananda Rai replied, that person who is reputed to be a devotee of Lord Krishna enjoys the utmost fame and glory. Purport. The greatest reputation a living being can have is to be a devotee of Krishna and to act in Krishna consciousness. In the material world, everyone is trying to be famous by accumulating a large bank balance or material opulence. There is a steady competition among karmis attempting to advance in a wealthy society. The whole world is turning in accordance with that competitive mood. But this kind of name and fame is temporary, for it lasts only as long as the temporary material body exists. It may not even last that long. For years, I think Bill Gates was considered the richest. Then one year they said the owner of IKEA. And then they said, well, then this is a whole big confusion. Was he or wasn't he? And then after a few days, I think they rescinded it and they said, well, actually, it's in the names of trusts, it's not his. And, okay, so Bill Gates was back on top. It's like, which is the tallest building in the world? There's like competition. You know? Like it was, I think it was the Sears Tower in Chicago. And then they built one in Singapore that was higher. But the actual building wasn't as high, but they built a tower on top. So that the tower on the top was higher than the tip of the tower on the Sears. So the In Chicago, they still advertise the Sears Tower as the tallest building in the world because they're not counting that. In Singapore, they're advertising that their building is the tallest in the world. So there's this competition always going on. Sports, you know, who's going to win the whatever, the bowl. And so, but people, whatever it is, they want to be famous. You know, movie stars are famous, sports heroes are famous, rich people are famous. People want to be famous. But according to this, one who is reputed as a devotee enjoys the utmost fame. Now, we'll read further. Of course, that fame attached to being a rich person or a glamorous person that only lasts as long as the body. One of the founders of industry in the United States was Henry Ford. He was one of the richest people in the world at the time. And his great-grandson, Alfred Ford, became a devotee. And the first time he met Srila Prabhupada, because you can imagine being the great-grandson of Henry Ford, that's going to be in your consciousness, I'm the great-grandson of Henry Ford. So, came into the room and Srila Prabhupada said, "So, I understand you're the grandson of Henry Ford." "Yes." "And where is Henry Ford now?" He just immediately, you know, took him off the bodily platform. "Well, yeah, where is he now? Maybe he's an ant. A worm in the stool. We don't know where he is now." So at best, it will last as long as the body. Then we don't know where it's heading for. Like Prabhupada said, people are so worried. Of course, now it's more acute, but even then, people were worried, like, what's going to happen to the motor cars if there's no petroleum in the future. And Prabhupada said, "Oh, they're so worried, you know, is there going to be petroleum for their children and grandchildren to run their automobiles? But they're not thinking that they're going to take birth as a cockroach in the back of the automobile." They're worried, "Oh, it's my son, he's driving a big car, they're still petroleum." And meanwhile, the father's in the back seat in the body of a cockroach. But he's not thinking about that. So the fame that's attached to the body is short-lived. It's very short-lived. At most, it lasts as long as the body. And it may not last that long. This kind of name and fame is temporary, for it lasts only as long as the temporary material body exists. One may become famous as a Brahmagyani, an impersonalist scholar, or one may become a material opulent person. In either case, such reputations are inferior to the reputation of Krishna's devotee. In the Garuda Purana, it is said, "Kalo bhagavatam nama durlabham naiva labhyate brahma rudra padokritstam guruna katitam nama." In this age of Kali, the fame of one who is known as a great devotee is very rare. However, such a position is superior to that of the great demigods like Brahma and Mahadeva. That is the opinion of all spiritual masters. So we're, because we identify with the body and we identify ourselves as residents of the planet Earth. Actually, we're not the body, we're spirit souls, and we're meant to get out of the material world and return to our real home, which is with Krishna. But because we identify with the body and we consider the Earth planet to be our home, or not even the whole planet, but America, not only America, but California, not only California, Southern California. We're very worried about what the people around us think of us. We're very worried. We don't want to be too open about being devotees because we don't know what the people will think. And that could affect our educational career, it could affect our occupational career, it could affect our sense of congeniality in the society. So we're very careful how we present ourselves so that people think we're okay, you know, we're like them. You know, we're like them. We're not different. But this society, the population of living entities, is much greater than the population in Southern California or the United States or the planet Earth. In fact, the whole material creation is just 1/4 of the entire kingdom of God. This is the prison house. We're the prisoners, and we're trying to impress the other prisoners. So they think like that we're like them. You know, we're as criminal as you are. You know, we're as ignorant as you are. Don't think we're any different from you. We want to fit in that society. We're not thinking of the real population, the liberated souls who aren't in the prison, and that the fame of a devotee extends, you know, to them. And they're the people who we should really be trying to impress, not the other criminals, not the other fools and rascals. And the fame of a devotee goes beyond the universe, goes beyond the planet, goes beyond the universe, goes all the way to the spiritual world. Eve yasya gusuk tribhuvana. Haritam Das Thakur glorifies the spiritual master that is famous spread throughout the three worlds. Now that's real fame, and it's not dependent on the body, and it's not based on the recognition of ignorant fools. But what about these other famous people, these political leaders and intellectual giants, and what about them? They're famous. Well, the Bhagavatam says that those people who are not God conscious are like bigger animals, and they are praised by smaller animals. It might sound very harsh, but the very basic idea is that if you identify with the body, you're an animal. As Srila Prabhupada used to say, if the dog is thinking, I'm a bulldog, and if the man is thinking, I'm a British man, what's the difference? Both in the bodily concept of life. So, the people who are famous in this world, who are praised in this world, they're bigger animals for being praised by smaller animals. But after all, what is the significance of an animal? The lion is the king of the jungle, and so all the other animals are afraid. You know, the lion. But what does it amount to? It's got no significance. It's king of the jungle. So we want to be famous in human society. An actual human society means God conscious. Dharmena hinapasubhi samana. Without religion, without God consciousness, there's no difference between a man and an animal. Anyway, there are many verses that support the same point. We come to text 247. Sampatirya madhye jivera kon sampatigani radha krishne prema yandra se badha dani. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked, of the many capitalists who possess great riches, who is the topmost? Ramananda Rai replied, he who is richest in love for Radha and Krishna is the greatest capitalist. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Everyone in this material world is attempting to acquire riches to satisfy the senses. Actually, no one cares for anything other than acquiring material possessions and maintaining them. The wealthy are generally accepted as the most important personalities in this material world. But when we compare a material man of wealth to one wealthy in devotional service to Radha and Krishna, the latter is found to be the greatest capitalist. According to Srimad Bhagavatam 10.39.2, Kimalabhyam Bhagavati prasane shiniketane tatapi tat para rajan nahi vanchanti kinchana. What is difficult for the devotees of Lord Krishna, who is the shelter of the goddess of fortune? Although such devotees can obtain anything, O king, they do not desire anything. And that's another point, that as long as someone is in want, it means he has less. So a devotee, he's satisfied with the service of the Lord. So he's the richest because he has what he wants. And others who want to increase their material acquisitions, they're never satisfied, they're always in want. They want more. Some decades now, John Paul Getty was the richest man in the world. And one newspaper reporter asked him, you know, you're the richest man in the world, you have everything you could possibly want. What is your philosophy of life in one word? Can you give us your philosophy of life in one word? He said, yes. More. He always wanted more. That means he never had enough. Always wanted more. Yeah.
One little comment in this regard?
Please.
J.P. Getty was so greedy that in his mansion, he had a payphone. If his guests wanted to use the phone, they had to put a dime in.
Yeah. Wow. Because they also asked him, you know, you're the richest man in the world, have everything you can possibly want, everything that money could buy. When you're alone, when there's no one around, what do you think about? And he answered, I think about how to pay the bills. The same. The big animal and the small animal. Small person is thinking how to make the payment on the car, you know, how to make the payment on the mortgage. And he's thinking how to make the payment on this, you know, billion-dollar acquisition. Multi-billion-dollar acquisition. But it's the same consciousness. The same consciousness on a different scale. There's a story of Emperor Akbar. He was the emperor of India. He was a Muslim, but he was very open to Hindus. And in his court, he had some Hindus, and one was Tansen. He was a great singer. But he was always thinking, you know, Tansen sings so beautifully, but what about his teacher? I wish I could hear his teacher sing. And his teacher was named Haridas, who was a saintly person who lived in Vrindavan. But he wouldn't sing for a king. He only sang for Krishna. So the king devised a scheme that he would disguise himself as an ordinary person and accompany Tansen to visit Haridas. And Haridas, well, he would inquire, or even otherwise, Tansen would sing before him to show how well he had learned from his teacher. And while singing, he would make a mistake. That was the plan. While singing, he would make a mistake. And then Haridas would interrupt him and sing it the right way. And thus Emperor Akbar would get to hear Haridas sing. So they went to his little bhajan kutir in Vrindavan, and everything went according to plan. But when Akbar heard the beauty of Haridas's voice, not just the material beauty, but the spiritual beauty, he was overwhelmed. And he took off with his royal pendant, which was concealed under his cloth, and he just like threw it on the floor in front of Haridas. Then Haridas saw, oh, this is not who he was pretending to be. This is king, and he stopped singing. Then the king, you know, he felt very, on the one hand, he wanted to reward Haridas for that wonderful experience. And at the same time, he might have felt bad for having tried to trick him. So he said, you know, I can never repay you for this. You know, I want to give you something, whatever you want. I'll give you anything. Whatever is it within my power to give. So Haridas said, well, I'll show you what I want you to do. So they walked a short distance to the Yamuna River, and there was a little bathing ghat, and there was cracks in the steps. So Haridas said to the emperor that I want you to repair the steps, bathing ghat. The emperor said, oh, this is, you know, I could give you anything you want. You're just asking me to repair some cracks in the steps. Well, Haridas said, look, put your face in the water and look and see what's involved. So the emperor put his eyes in the water to look at the steps under the water. And by Haridasa's mercy, he was able to see the actual feature of Jamuna River and the spiritual Vrindavan. And he saw that Ghat was made of all, well, Chintamani, like the most precious gems, more precious than anything the king had in his treasures. So then the king brought his head out of the water and he looked at Haridas, and Haridas smiled. The king said, "With all the wealth in my treasury, I could not do what you asked." So our standard of wealth in the material world, our standard of riches, is so poor. Once Srila Prabhupada came to Juhu. I was the temple president there. And he had just come from the Orient, I think Hong Kong, either Hong Kong or Manila. And the devotees had arranged to receive him at the airport in a Rolls Royce, with a Rolls Royce. So there was a press conference, and one of the newspaper reporters said, "You know, you're supposed to be a spiritual person, and they've brought you in a Rolls Royce. Now that doesn't, you know, what do you have to say about that?" And Prabhupada recited some verses from the Brahma Samhita. Chintamani prakatasadmasu kalpa vriksha laksha vritesu sarabhi ravi palyantam. That he said, "I come from the spiritual world, and in the spiritual world, everything is made of Chintamani gems. Chintamani gems are much more valuable even than gold. If they had come to receive me in a solid gold car, it would not have been good enough." "But that was the best they could do, so I had to accept it." And then, you know, Prabhupada looked at me and he said, "You know, what else can you say to such people?" But although it was spoken in an ironic way, it actually illustrates the point that this world of death, Mrityaloka, this is not opulent. It's all so gross. You have gold, platinum, diamond. So diamonds is just coal, right? Compressed coal. There's no life to it. It's just all dead matter. No life to it. Text 248. Dukkha madhye kona dukkha hayu guru tara. Krishna bhakti viraha vina dukkha nahi deki para. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked, "Of all kinds of distress, what is the most painful?" Sri Ramananda Rai replied, "Apart from separation from the devotee of Krishna, I know of no unbearable happiness." Purport. Concerning this, the Lord states in the Vedic literature, "Mama anaradaya dukarta kutumbas saptamanasa satsanga rahito martyo vridaseva parichuta." A person who does not worship me, who is unduly attached to family, and who does not stick to devotional service, must be considered a most unhappy person. Similarly, one who does not associate with Vaishnavas or who does not render service to his superior is also a most unhappy person. There is also the following statement in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita 1.5.44. Swajivanadikam prathyam Sri Vishnu jana sangata vichedena chanam chatra nasukam sambhavamahe. Out of all kinds of desirable things experienced in the life of a living entity, association with the devotees of the Lord is the greatest. When we are separated from a devotee, even for a moment, we cannot enjoy happiness. Well, the real life of the living entity is devotional service. Jeeva Sarupai Krishna Nityadas. And devotional service can be executed in the association of devotees. Without the association of devotees, there's no happiness. Because there's no... Well, there's very little chance to hear and chant about Krishna. And therefore, it's worse than death for a devotee. And therefore, Sri Prabodhananda Saraswati prays, Kaivalya Narakayate, that Kaivalya, the merging into the impersonal Brahman, is like hell. Worse than hell. Because at least in hell you can preach. You can chant and hear the glories of the Lord. But in impersonal Brahman, there's no devotional service. There's no happiness. It's worse than hell. So that's the vision of the devotee. His life is devotional service, but devotional service can be performed in the association of other devotees. Therefore, he needs the association of devotees. He's addicted to the association of devotees. And if he doesn't have it, it becomes very painful. Unfortunately, in the bodily concept of life, as the verse says, if someone's unduly attached to family, they really suffer. Because in the end, they're bound to be separated. Of course, death will separate us from our family. But even apart from death, there can be other circumstances. I was just dealing with a family in Houston. I mean, it was like the most terrible thing in their lives, the worst calamity. Because somehow, although the parents had come to America, the father had come as a young man and began as a clerk in a gas station. And he just was very diligent, very conscientious, worked very hard. And his boss helped him. He was able to come up a bit. And then after 2 years, he was well enough settled to have his wife come and with their, I think they already had their son by then. And he just gradually, you know, he's very frugal. Like, for the first few years, he's living alone in like a very small apartment. And people saying, well, you're all alone. Why don't you get a television? I said, no. I didn't mind spending the money on the television. Then, you know, this son came, son grew up, had children. Father built a big house for the whole family, his son, his daughter-in-law, and their children. But because of Kali Yuga, because of Kali Yuga, they could live together. Eventually, there was too much tension. The difference in the generations, you know, the grandparents, then the children, then the grandchildren, and the difference in culture, it just didn't work. So it came to the stage where the son decided to move out of the house with his wife and three children. And the grandparents, they couldn't stay in the big house alone. It's too big and they couldn't afford it. So now they have to leave the house, and it's like the most heartbreaking situation. And then everyone is saying to everyone, like, you know, anyway. Do you love us more? Or do you love the house more? So there and the son, he actually made a little attempt to become a devotee. His father is actually a very good devotee. A person who does not worship me, who is unduly attached to family and who does not stick to devotional service, must be considered the most unhappy person. Well, anyway, they're at least have had some association. But it's like that, because without the association of devotees, you can't become a devotee and you can't continue in devotional service. Prahlad Maharaj, he was born in a family of demons. But he became a devotee because he had the association of Narada Muni while he was in the womb. But you can't live without devotees, so he would preach to his demonic classmates and get them to chant and dance and become devotees. Sometimes Prabhupada's disciples, grand disciples, followers, they go to a new place, they're no devotees. They can't stay there unless they make devotees. They can't live without devotees. Can't live without the association of devotees. Mukunda Dutta Prabhu, what do you have to say? You agree?
I agree 100%.
Yeah. Any devotee will agree. I received a phone call today from one lady devotee in South Africa, Ajita Krishna Dasi. So she had been living in one of the South African townships they call ghetto, and she was a devotee, but because of circumstances she ended up there, and it was like too oppressive, like she wanted to be closer to devotees. But somehow it didn't work out. She was going to move into one of the communities of devotees. It didn't work out. In the meantime, this very, very pious, very good lady, wealthy lady, who has a, I don't know what you'd call it, I guess, but like a large estate in the Knysna forest with many, like, chalets. It's like, she runs it as a tourist place. And she, on her way from England, she was British, on her way from England, she was, I guess, I don't know, hitchhiking or trekking across Africa, and she came to Kenya, and she became sick, and she wanted to go to the Catholic center or something. I'm not sure of the details. Anyway, by mistake, they sent her to the Hare Krishna temple. So she spent 3 months in the Hare Krishna temple in Nairobi. And she had some association. She didn't actually become a devotee, but she had some association. She was pious. She liked the devotees. And she developed some faith in Krishna. So somehow, after all these years, and, you know, establishing that, I guess it's a sort of like a resort or a retreat center or something in Neisner Forest, she met this devotee, Ajita Krishna, and offered her a place to stay there for free. And she said she always had this vision that one of the chalets, one of the buildings would become a devotee for a temple for Krishna. So she has everything. It's beautiful. It's in nature. She has all facilities. She doesn't have to pay any rent. And Neisner, I guess, like a lot of wealthy people, have houses there. It's a beautiful beach, and a lot of tourists come. But there's only one problem. There's no devotees there. No devotees there. She's very lonely. She phones. There's no devotees. She doesn't know what to do. Anyway, so that's the thing. That's the thing. I even had my own little story. I mean, nothing like that. But in Mauritius, we had a friend, Mr. Gautam Tilak. He was actually a friend of Srila Prabhupada's. He had a lot of sugar plantations, and he was a wealthy person. So he had a house on the seaside, and he was always inviting me to come and spend time at his house on the seaside. So I went with, I'm sure, I must have had at least one other devotee with me. We went, but it was like a desert. It was on the ocean, there were palm trees, you know. It was like a desert. There's no devotees, no deities. It's just this. I mean, he liked Prabhupada and the devotees, but I think his background was Arya Samaj, and it was just it's too dry. It was like being in a desert. It's too dry. So I stayed a few hours, and then I shifted to the temple. So that's general association of devotees, and then a pure devotee, you know, one spiritual master, pure devotee. Even Raghunath Das Goswami, are so advanced, you know, one of the six Goswamis. But after Rupa Goswami left this world, he felt so much separation, he wrote a poem. And he was so attached to Govardhan Hill. He said, you know, Govardhan Hill has become like a python. And he's so attached to Radhakund. He lived on the banks of Radhakund by Govardhan Hill. He said that Radhakund had become like the gaping jaws of a tiger. That Rupa Goswami. And Narottam Das Thakur also lamented in separation, you know, being bereft of Lord Chaitanya and the associates with whom he performed his pastimes. You know, he'll smash his head against the rocks and enter into the fire. So that separation cannot compare to any material separation. Material separation, time dulls you. You forget. It happens. Couldn't believe it. He's actually a very, very nice man, very pious man, very noble man. But he's I don't know, maybe he's 92 years old now. But his wife died maybe 2 years ago. And, of course, he's missed her deeply. And, you know, just trying to adjust to life without her. And then it just sort of slipped out at the end, sort of like about remarrying. And I said, no, it's too early. I can't think of that now. It's just the way it goes, you know. People forget and they drown themselves in something else to replace the lost loved one. But in devotional service, it's not like that. In devotional service, the relationships are eternal because they're not based on the body. And they continue even after death. Like Narottam Das Thakur, as Chaku Dandi Lo Ye Janme Prabhu say, that he who has opened my eyes with knowledge, he is my Lord birth after birth. And that separation in service becomes blissful. Like Srila Prabhupada wrote one letter to a disciple who was feeling his separation. Because when Prabhupada first came to America, he was with the devotees all the time. In New York City, there was only one center. He was with them all the time. And then some of the devotees went and opened the second center in San Francisco. And then for the New York devotees, it was so hard. They were used to seeing Prabhupada every day, being with him all the time. And then when Prabhupada went to India, it was even more. So he wrote to one disciple that I understand how you're feeling separation. I also feel separation from my Guru Maharaj. But by service, by following the instructions of the spiritual master, the feelings of separation turn into transcendental bliss. So this is the mystery of separation in Krishna consciousness, that externally there's separation, externally there's lamentation, but internally there's association by consciousness. Because the real thing is the soul. And the association on the spiritual platform is not limited by the body or separation based on the body or geographical distance. So what Ramananda Rai says is certainly true. It's the most intense separation, most intense pain. To feel separation from a pure devotee. But at the same time, although it's the most intense pain, it can serve as an impetus in one's devotional service. And then when one becomes more absorbed in devotional service, then one experiences meeting, even in separation. And therefore, so many times Srila Prabhupada said that although he's been separated from his Guru Maharaj for so many years, but he doesn't feel that he's not there because he's connected to his Guru Maharaj by service, by following his instructions. But in a general sense, we need the association of devotees to be happy. And among so many devotees, we may have a special relationship with a particular devotee, like Raghunath Das Goswami and Rupa Goswami. And even in the association of other devotees, feel separation from that one particular devotee with whom one has a special relationship. But even that can be reconciled through service and separation. And then in the end, there's always meeting. Because when we all go back home, back to Godhead, we'll all meet again. Of course, sometimes because we are in the bodily concept of life, we don't see each other completely from the spiritual point of view. We identify with the body, we have material desires, so we want our material desires to be fulfilled by the people around us. That's natural. And then when our material desires aren't fulfilled, you know, we find fault, or we complain, or we look somewhere else. I mean, it may be subtle. You know, we want love, we want affection, we want friendship, we want fellowship. That's natural. These are like natural human needs, wants. So we may bring these with us when we associate with devotees, and we want these things from devotees, and when we don't get them, and we feel frustrated, we complain, we find fault, or we try to get that sort of like society, friendship, and love elsewhere. But on the level of pure devotional service, we only want to serve. And although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said Jive Surapai Krishna Nitya Das, we're the eternal servant of Krishna, but he clarified Gopi Bhartu Pada Kabalayor Dasa Dasa Das, that I'm actually the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. Not even directly the servant of Krishna. So that's our actual position, we're the servant of the servant. So how can we place demands on our masters? The other devotees are our prabhus, they're our masters. How can we place demands on them, even in these subtle ways that we, for our own gratification, we're their servant? So in that mood, you know, our relationships become very congenial. In fact, once a disciple asked Srila Prabhupada, because there was, I don't know, some dissension among the devotees or disagreements among the devotees. And he asked, you know, what can we do to improve the relationships? And Prabhupada said, if each devotee thinks I'm the servant of the servant, then there'll be no problem. But if we have that conditioning, we want to be the master. We want the other devotees to serve us, or we want to get something from them. But Gopi Bhartu Padakamalayor Dasa Dasa Dasa, we're the servant of the servant of the servant. We place no demands on the master. That's not pure devotional service. After Dashrigadev killed Hiranyakasipu, he offered Prahlad, you take whatever you want. I'll give you any benediction. You take whatever you want. And Prahlad said, I don't want anything from you. By constitution, you are my master. By constitution, I'm your servant. We have no other relationship. If I wanted something from you in exchange for my service, I wouldn't be a servant, I'd be a businessman. I don't want to do business with you, that I give you some service and you give me something in return. I'm your servant because that's my constitutional position. And he said, if you know, if a servant does service to get something in return, he's not a real servant. And if a master gives something in return in order to maintain his prestigious position as master, he's not a real master. Real master means he doesn't give anything except more service. And real servant means he doesn't ask for anything accept more service. That's the only exchange. Nothing else. So on that platform, you know, the relationships are very congenial. And Krishna's the center. And the bodily concept, I'm the center. I'm me and mine. And the spiritual concept of devotional service, Krishna is the center. And we're all servants. But not directly servants, servants of the servants. And then Krishna is pleased, and his servants are pleased, everyone is pleased. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments?
It goes back to the earlier part of your lecture, and I think it's very interesting. You were discussing, as Prabhupada did in the early days, his mission in Nirvaseshya Sunyavadi, he came to destroy impersonalism and voidism, and back then we were all hippies, and we were into this idea of satiating our senses, and Prabhupada was talking about these impersonalists who were trying to merge and refrain from desire, and we're all wondering, who's he talking about? Maybe in India, but in America, we don't have that experience. In America, everyone is into, back then especially, free love, enjoying your senses, and sense gratification. And that hasn't changed that much either. It seems like in the New Age movement, there is a big emphasis on don't repress your senses. Engage your senses. You know, don't restrain, because that's artificial. Engage them, because that's the real path of understanding who you are, and attaining happiness. Engage your senses. And I guess the question pertains to some degree ourselves as devotees, because I think, as you just pointed out, there's that, not ambiguity, but that friction when we start to feel unhappiness or unfulfillment, that devotees are not giving me what I want. So how do we live a healthy, happy spiritual life without feeling this this sense of I'm not getting what I want, and I'm feeling repressed, and I'm anger. So many things come up in the mind, or lust, anger, different things. How do we grow as a society, attract new people that this is the right way of life, and be happy at the same time? If that's a question, I'm not sure it's a question.
Do you have any ideas?
Throwing it back at me. Yeah.
I'm sure you must have thought of it.
Well, I know this is the right way, and there are some interesting... I've read some different devotees who have brought this issue up. I think your point was actually maybe needs to be more developed. I think in the association of devotees, we just need to learn how to relate to Vaishnavas more in the right way. And I think we just knew, as a, we are the first generation, Prabhupada came, and now we have second generation, so in a sense we're very new, and maybe we don't know yet how to be a Vaishnav society. Rupa Goswami talks about revealing the mind and that kind of thing, and I don't think we're quite there yet, because if we were, maybe our mood would be a little more joyful, we would enjoy service mood more than actually we do right now. So maybe it's a matter of time, I don't know, in continuing the preaching spirit. In actuality, we're not really repressing our senses at all, we're really engaging our senses. We're constantly festivals. We're constantly glorifying devotees and different incarnations of Krishna. We're always taking prasadam, so there's no question of repression. But still, there's the problem that lies within, as you talked about. There is the residual karma that seems to bother us, and that's the question: how devotees can deal with that still within the society and not feel they have to go outside in order to take care of that issue.
That's a very good question. Somehow I'm thinking of 1969 late 69 or early 70 in the Boston Temple. Tamal Krishna Goswami had come for the first time, and he was a legend from the West Coast. And because he was coming for the first time, Brahmananda Prabhu, who was in New York, he was the legend on the East Coast. He came up to meet him. And so in the evening, after we had a little prasad, I think we used to have puffed rice and peanuts and hot milk. So we were standing in line to wash our plates in the sink. And Brahmananda Prabhu said, you know, everyone wants love. So if we just love each other, then everyone will get what they want and everyone will be happy. And it sounded very clear and logical and sensible and true. But the catch is that to really love someone, you have to be pure. Otherwise, what passes as love, as Srila Prabhupada would say, is actually lust. You know? Like the typical example, the boy tells the girl, I love you, the girl tells the boy, I love you. But it's actually not love, it's lust. And if either partner doesn't get from the other what he or she wants, then the relationship ends. So when we become more advanced, more pure in heart, then we can actually serve. You know, love isn't just a sentiment. Love is a process, and the process is manifest in service. And for that, to clean the heart, Cheto Darpano Marjanam, we have the chanting of the holy name, offenseless chanting of the holy name. That will cleanse the heart, and that will create the type of relationships we want to have with each other. The other side, which helps a lot, is culture, etiquette. You know, even if deep love is not there, but if there's culture, if there's etiquette, the etiquette will regulate the relationships, and it will make the social interaction smoother. You know, because different people have different roles; their roles are defined. The etiquette attached to each role is defined. How to relate to other people, like it was mentioned in the quotation in the purport, that one who does not serve a superior is a most unhappy person. So there's culture, there's etiquette, there's different relationships. A junior to a senior, you know, equal to an equal, a senior to a junior, there are different relationships, and they're prescribed, you know, that the junior should serve the senior. The senior should give instructions and guidance and affection to the junior. The equals should be friends. And there's there's sort of like a contaminated version of each of those relationships. And in the contaminated version, the senior exploits the junior. And the junior is envious of the senior. And amongst equals, instead of genuine open friendship, they're proud. Each one is like, you know, proud of himself and proud of themselves together. So that's very important, and we lack that. Mm. We lack that. And, you know, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that there's different levels of conversion. And the first level is, say, spiritual or religious. But the cultural level takes longer. Mm. So, you know, devotees can quickly grasp the fundamental principles. I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. But it takes longer to understand the culture and adopt the culture. Mm. And it's even more complicated now because the culture, which was common in India, is deteriorating in India, you know, vastly deteriorating in India with all this, you know, influence of the West. Mm-hmm. And then the Indians come to the West and they get further influenced by the West. So it's Kali Yuga, it's getting worse. Mm. It's getting worse. But we do need that culture, and we need that the purity. The main thing is the purity of the heart, and that comes from the process of devotional service, especially chanting, offenseless chanting, and hearing about Krishna, and serving.
And reading, too, because we've been reading today, and reading is very important.
Yeah. Well, reading is in the category of hearing, but yes, reading. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, it's the age of Kali. Kali means quarrel. Mm-hmm. And in the age of Kali, people quarrel over the smallest thing. Mm-hmm. Make a big thing out of such mm-hmm. a small thing. So practically, I always feel that the two things that can help devotees appreciate other devotees, the first is preaching. If you go out and meet people, then you see the difference between the people you meet and the devotees. But devotees don't preach that, you know, they grihasthas, and there aren't that many devotees who are actively preaching outside of the temples. And probably even in the temples to some extent. So it's sort of like familiarity breeds contempt. Mm. But if you go out there, you go on the street, you meet the people, you speak to them, you see what kind of reactions you get and what kind of people you're dealing with, you appreciate devotees. Or the other way is you end up in the beautiful Neisner forest without devotees. Then you appreciate devotees. It is very important that we have good relationships. Because it's two things. If we chant and hear, you know, sadhana, if we have strong sadhana and good relationships amongst the devotees, then we'll grow and prosper. But if our relationships are poor, or our sadhana is poor, or both are poor, then tend to disintegrate. The devotees are very nice. I mean, we speak like this just to, you know, we have to distinguish between the creeper and the weeds, and, but otherwise, they're chanting, they're serving. They're the best people in the world.